This is Laser Knees number 27, a production of the Toll Network, home of biting analysis. I'm Aleph, the thesis-seeking critic, do art red.
And I'm Sono, the tricky critic, do art green.
Think heroes on trial, critical squadron, do art red.
Join us as we continue on our wild ride through Dobutsu Sentai Zyuojirō. Can Yamato lead his human friends and this other guy through an adventure to save the human world from the Death Galleon and Captain Ahab? Find out how we think he's doing as we share our thoughts on Dobutsu Sentai Zyuojirō Episode 33, Cat Tricks and Gratitude. Our episode writer was, again, Shimo Yamakento. Our director was Shibasaki Takayuki. So I'm just going to charge right ahead into our instincts on this episode.
Please do.
Which was surprisingly not terrible.
I know, right?
Yeah. Like, man, check the last episode, guys. We were apprehensive.
Look, it's hard not to be, given how these characters have been done the rest of the show.
Yeah, but our buddy...
Except for, like, that one episode with Amu. Like,
yeah, and,
cool.
And that one episode with Leo and his boyfriend. That was a pretty good episode.
Oh, that was a good one, yeah. I miss his boyfriend.
Yeah, bring that guy back. But our buddy Shimoyama seems to at least be aiming for making Leo a decent enough guy to be around, who's just kind of a handful sometimes, instead of him being a living YouTube comment. I'm slightly disappointed in feeling that this is more of a Leo episode that Amu was just also predominantly in, rather than a Leo and Amu episode, but I feel like Shimoyama is trying to mature Leo a bit, which I'm so grateful for. And there's something real interesting in the way this episode spins the cat trick. They start out with Leo calling it underhanded and finding it unfair, but Amu thinking that it's a pretty smart strategy, which is an interesting way to show how they both approach fighting. And even when discussing sumo with Mario, he brings up the cat trick specifically as a strategy that smaller opponents use in order to gain an advantage, in spite of their size, which kind of helps legitimize it. And is, by the way, a great use of Mario in aiding the plot.
Yeah, it's nice to see Mario being useful and not just, hey, here's a weird adult.
Yeah, like, he still did the weird bear thing, but, like, he still added to what was going on, which was nice. And in the end, by the end of the episode, it's a strategy that's both directly and indirectly used by Leo and Amu to win and defeat Sumotron. And, you know, Amu is impressed with Leo using it and starts teasing him about maturing by widening his skills and really aiming for the win instead of, you know, committing to some idea in his head.
Yeah, it was nice to just not want to push them both into a mud puddle, especially Leo, because, again, I just want to drop a bus on him from orbit. Just, you know, it's like flaming on re-entry. Just, like, the friction of the air as it hits terminal velocity and just slams into him. Just when he's, like, walking down the street talking about, like, you know, getting his new fedora polished or whatever. Oh, I'm sorry, his trilby. My bad. And to that end, though, like, I'm watching the episode, I didn't get a message, per se, but, like, if nothing else, it did a great job of spinning out the best possible versions of Leo and Amu while acknowledging some of the more lamentable characteristics they've exhibited throughout the rest of the show. And it does so without, like, shaming either Amu for being more tricky, because, like you said, Mario shows up in the plot to say, no, look, this is what smaller fighters have to do if they're going to fight, if they're going to be sumo wrestlers. Nor does it make fun of Leo's inability to own up to a capacity for trickery, while we see that a lot of how he goes is related to how he's got this simple and straightforward personality that is sometimes as much a hindrance as it is a strength. And that's really cool, because we haven't seen that up till now. And I guess now that I'm talking, like, there kind of is a message in that you got to find the best way to play the hand you've been dealt. I mean, look, I'm not crazy about the execution they did with Amu, and I know we're going to get into that, but, like, at least it's a Leo and Amu episode that doesn't make me want to turn the show off forever or, like, go on a rampage or just make one of those cheap memes where, like, you take the photo of Ishinomori and underneath you just have Sentai was a mistake. Like, Look, I'm so lucky.
Look, it feels like it with Leo pretty much every time he opens his mouth when Komura is writing him.
Yeah, which is, like, again, yo, Junko Komura, you wrote half of Akiba Ranger and a good chunk of Gokaiger. Like,
how?
What happened? Is this a producer thing? Like, look, if you were to tell me this was a producer thing, I would believe it.
Yeah, so would I. Producers have messed up some stuff.
Yes, which, I mean, you know, I hate to always go back to blaming the producers, but it's just one of those things where this is a massive top-down and intricate web of who's responsible for what, and I want to know who to blame, so I can just be like, you, just leave, and they would be like, I'm sorry, I don't have to listen to you. You're not even our prime demographic, and you only occasionally buy Sentai toys. To which I would have to say, that is fair.
Nonetheless, please leave.
Yes, exactly. Now, before we... we're going to have, like, a slight interruption to our flow here, because while we were sort of talking in our pre-show, you had ended up doing some research that you want to bring up, and I would love for you to frame it for us.
I am. I'm going to pull a bit of a cat trick of my own here, with a surprise crash course on women and sumo, because I got curious after this episode and ended up just doing a bit of research, very, very cursory stuff in just over the course of today, before the show, and man, it's certainly something. We're gonna be quoting a lot of sources that I found, and we're gonna kind of go back and forth in reading them. But I want to just start with kind of the basics and the core of this from Wikipedia's page on controversies in professional sumo wrestling. So this is an excerpt, and by excerpt I mean this is basically the entire section on women in sumo. But it's an excerpt from the page as a whole. Professional sumo is notable for its exclusion of women from competing and ceremonies. Women are not allowed to enter or touch the sumo wrestling ring, the dojo, as this is traditionally seen to be a violation of the purity of the dojo. The female governor of Osaka from 2000 to 2008, Fusei Ota, when called upon to present the governor's prize to the champion of the annual Osaka tournament, was required to do so on the walkway beside the ring or send a male representative in her place. She repeatedly challenged the Sumo Association's policy by requesting to be allowed to fulfill her traditional role as governor. Her requests were repeatedly rejected until she stepped down from office. The view of those who criticize this continuing men-only policy is that it's discriminatory and oppressive, which personally
okay,
I agree with.
Yeah, like...
It's like, you're not wrong. But to continue, in general, women in the sumo world are only expected to be supportive wives of the wrestlers, and in the case that their husband has become a stable master, a surrogate mother for all of his disciples.
Yikes. That's intense.
Yeah. Again, the view of the Sumo Association is that this is a tradition that has been firmly maintained through the centuries, so it would be a dishonor to all of their ancestors to change it. Continuing in the article, this was not always the case. Starting as early as the 18th century, a form of female sumo, or onizumo, was performed in some areas of Japan. In the cities, it was more of a spectacle, often associated with brothels. However, some areas of Japan, female sumo had a serious role in certain Shinto rituals. In later years, there were limited tours of female sumo that lasted for a time. However, female sumo is not considered to be authentic by most Japanese and is now prohibited from taking place beyond amateur settings. So that's Wikipedia's information. I then went a little further, looked at more things, and found a bit relating specifically to the history of women in sumo and women's sumotori from the Female Single Combat Club, which is FSCClub.com. I collected links for all of these that we'll provide with the show notes.
And thank you for it, because this is really a fascinating subject and kind of like, well, this... Like, as we're going to get into later, like, it kind of makes it feel intense that someone in Super Sentai would do this.
Yeah.
But to, I'm just going to read, because I know that just reading an article straight, a bunch of excerpts from articles straight through can really mess with the body's throat, so I got your back.
Thank you.
So this is, again, from the Female Single Combat Club article relating specifically to the history of women in sumo. For a long time, women were prohibited from even watching sumo contests because it would be considered as desecrating of this sacred samurai ritual. In 1873, for the record, that's only 143 years ago, that's just us, like, making note of that, to continue. The ban on watching sumo was lifted, and women became zealous fans of this wrestling style and contributed to revival of its past glory. Despite sumo seeming to be the most masculine sport, as early as the 1700s, women's sumo, or onazumo, did exist. It started in Osaka and was performed in connection with prostitution houses. Matches were organized between women and also between women and blind men. Some of the female sumoists were actually skilled wrestlers. By 1744, Onazumo's popularity had reached Edo, or as it would later be called, Tokyo. Tournaments were held at Asakusa Temple until authorities closed them down on the basis that it was immoral. However, due to popular demand, the matches continued at different locations in northern Japan. A few exhibitions even took place in Hawaii. But by 1926, this form of activity was completely banned for women. For male sumo, in the male sumo world, it was not even considered the same sport. Men's professional sumo has a long history, and it is considered a very honorable activity, whereas women's sumo is tied to prostitution houses and was more for male entertainment. As a result, it is considered as a taboo subject that should not be brought up with anyone involved in the, quote, real, end quote, sumo world. Which is the end of their sort of short rundown on the history.
Yeah, they do go into more of the history of sumo further in that article, but this is the bit that pertains specifically to the history of Onazumo. So that's what I found most relevant. The Daily Mail did a piece on the growing popularity of sumo amongst women and amongst female sumo wrestlers and how they're trying to kind of get back into the sport. And there's nothing really in that article that's different than the other information we're presenting, but there was a specifically gross quote that I just felt I needed to share this one, because if I have to live with knowing this, so does everyone else. If I have to live with having read this, so do all of you. And this quote is from Toshiaki Hirahara, who is the coach of Tokyo University Sumo Club. And he says, "I think the fact that women cannot enter the sacred national dojo is understandable, as it is the realm of the gods."
That's just, that is intense. Like, and it's a thing like where I know we both have to be very careful here, because, like, look, different culture, etc., different histories, and lots of weird histories between the place we come from, just messing with Japan generally, but at the same time, like, wow!
Like,
that's a thing a person in 2016 said!
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure. This is a person someone within the last, like, probably 5 years has said.
Yeah! And I mean, like, I again, Sono, thank you for, like, getting curious about this, because I never would have noticed how kind of intense this whole matter was. Now, there was also an ABC News article that you had brought up, and if I may?
Yeah, go right ahead.
All right. Japan's National Sumo Association says that it has no problem with women competing in the sport on an amateur level, but they're not even opposed to the possibility of it becoming an Olympic sport someday. But tradition is tradition, rules are rules, and women are still not welcome on the professional levels. There's a little break. But the Old Boy Network had better watch out, because female sumo only continues to grow in leaps and pounds. That's a nice pun they put in there. Girls as young as 8 are now picking up the sport in school, and 2 women have even broken the gender barrier and are now calling the shots as referees. Ooh, we're going to have to find out their names.
Yes.
Good on them. The women of sumo respect the traditions of the sport, and they're working hard to make their mark in this all-male society. In the process, however, they've been sure not to hold a grudge. They even invite the men inside the ring at the women-only competitions, which, like, to me, I'm just like, that's not holding a grudge. That's, we're brave enough.
And I think it's amazing on this level that they not only let Amu have a serious sumo match, like a serious in-a-ring match that was considered part of a tournament, and then against a Yokozuna at that, but also let her win the final bout, the big final bout, and be praised for it not only by Leo, but also by Yokozuna Sumotron. She was also welcomed into the sumo club by the two wrestlers that they met, and were offered to be trained with no protest from anyone in that sumo club.
And that was, like, you know, just on its own, I thought, oh, that's really sweet. You know, they let a girl win the sporting event, and, like, look, even in the States, you don't see that very often.
Yeah.
Nowhere near as often as you should. But then you read all this in context, and you're like, man, Super Sentai planting a flag.
Yeah, because, I mean, I keep thinking about this, and the line in that ABC article that was echoed in several other articles I read, I believe even that Daily Mail piece, I may be wrong about that, but 8-year-old girls joining their elementary school sumo clubs. 8-year-old girls and boys are the exact people watching this show. Imagine how much it probably means to those girls joining their school sumo club to see Amu take on a Yokozuna and win. Like, this character who they're supposed to see as a role model, who they're supposed to emulate and relate to.
And she's the pink. Like, the yeah. pink is the most feminine, like, because that's sort of, she's pink for
She's the feminine one in the team. And think about the message being shown to the little boys in those sumo clubs that Amu and Leo are treated as equals when approaching sumo. Like, that's what this is all about, folks. This is it right here, and I can't stress it enough.
Yeah, like, look, like, we are going to have our issues with the whole using feminine wiles to win thing, but this is also Sentai planting a flag saying, no, girls can do sumo, period. And I love them for it, because it's just, guys, we don't have to make this. Also, it's a nice subtle repudiation of Leo, because it's like, what, you got this whole thing like, ah, I can't go hard on a girl? I'm like, well, guess what?
Yeah.
Yeah, ladies can throw down as hard as you. And again, like, they even do the thing. I love, again, that they just set it up, that it's like, no, look, inside the ring, you can be tricky, you can be clever, you can be vicious, you can be sneaky. It's all, everything's fair in here. So the thing she did, like, look, girl, you exploited your enemy's weakness. That's how you won. Good on ya.
And
I love that it's if they're gonna have the viciousness in the ring, everyone gets to benefit from that viciousness.
Yes. And lots of other articles talk about the sport growing in popularity amongst women, and school and amateur clubs are now allowing women to take part. And it's, the whole thing is really something that's fascinating and that I'd love to do more research on. But dang, do I find myself really proud of this show for taking such a big step up to the plate on this. And especially, like we said, using Amu, who isn't the tough girl on the team, and doing it with her. Where it's like, no, the feminine girl, even she can step it up in the ring and take on a Yokozuna because she believes in it.
Yeah, and there's no, like, well, she's special among girls. She's not like other girls. She likes violence and fighting and not, like, makeup and junk. No, it's like, no, this is Amu, yo.
It's like, no, this is Amu, who made a comment earlier, like, she didn't want to do it because it wasn't cute.
Yeah. Like, no, that's really just not my style, guys.
It's,
like,
it's not me. Look, Leo, I know Leo is strong. Leo likes to fight. He will do this. I will help in other ways.
Yeah.
But even when it comes down to it, if that girl wants to do sumo, she can do it.
Yeah.
And man, I don't think I've ever been this proud of Super Sentai.
Nor I, like, which is, again, it's a weird thing to say about an episode with Amu and Leo.
Yeah.
Because, again, like, listeners to the Laser Knees part of the Tool Network will be very aware that we have not been the biggest fans.
I mean, like, I'm a little bit of an Amu apologist, but I'm also not an apologist. Like, I love her and I love things about her, but I acknowledge openly they've been writing her like garbage.
Yeah, they really have. Like, and I totally understand why you want to be an apologist, because I know that I've noticed that you really seem to like the girls. And not just the big tough girls, but the girls who are allowed to be feminine. And I hate this construction, but I don't know how to say it without implicitly saying that these two are fundamentally considered different. But they're allowed to be both feminine and strong.
Yeah.
And you don't see that enough. Like,
no, and I'm so, so proud of this episode.
Yeah, good on you, Super Sentai. Good on you. Oh, what's the name? Ah, yeah. Shimomoya Kento. Shimoyama Kento.
Yeah, just apologies. good on
quick read stumbling.
Everyone involved in this.
Yeah, well, maybe not well, like whoever did the.
Yeah, well,
in fact, let's get into that. Let's get our hackles up.
Okay, so this is really the only complaint that both of us have about this episode, but it's a big complaint, especially after we've learned all of this about women in sumo. And it's part of what I'd been concerned about since the episode preview last week. This whole bit of Amu flirting with Sumotron to distract him so she could win. And my problem, more than anything, is just with the way that she's kind of all over him and touching him, and it made my skin crawl. Like, you can take this scene, not rewrite a single line of dialogue, and just have Amu, like, walking around him. Have them circling each other, have her maybe, like, touching her face thoughtfully, as she's saying the exact same lines, because the words she's saying are inherently non-sexual. So, if you do it that way, and still have Sumotron reacting the same way, it's him projecting an idea onto Amu's action. Which, again, are inherent, would, if she was not touching him, would be inherently non-sexual, and Amu just taking advantage of it. Which feels more true to Amu's nature, and kind of the core of who she is, in spite of the garbage they keep writing onto her.
The core of who you would like her to be, at the very least.
Well, the core of who she is in episodes that aren't about her.
Yeah, good point.
Like, we'll talk about that another day because we've got stuff to cover, but I will one day go kind of on a long rant about kind of how I see Amu and how I see Amu through the episodes that aren't about her, and how much I think those define her.
I think that'd be a good, like, we should stick a pin in that for, like, a Writer Jump special. We'll just, like, you know, characters who are misunderstood, who are mistreated by their narratives.
I would love to do that, because that is my whole
deal. That's a
thing
I've noticed that is quite close to your heart, and it's a thing, like, I would definitely go after for, like, one or two people.
Yeah, no, it's, because I've discussed this at length with a friend, and I'd be happy to dig all that up and really talk about how I think the other episodes in this show, kind of how they build Amu as someone entirely different than these episodes that focus on her. But again, I feel like her doing something that someone could, inherently non-sexual, that could be perceived by someone else as sexual, and her just taking advantage of it, feels much more true to her nature than her just instigating it and using this same skeevy trope to bring down her opponent. And it's really a shame that this writer, who can make Leo of all people palatable, is resorting to this for Amu. Though I'm not sure if I'm supposed to blame the writer or the director. I guess I'd have to see the script and know what stage direction, if any, the writer called for. Because if the writer didn't write that in stage direction, that's a director issue. So I'm not 100% sure who to blame on it, but it was a misstep.
It was. And, like, I'm right with you, because I don't know who to blame either, but I am a very simple creature. I want to know who to blame. I want to be able to point the finger and say, you are terrible. But we've already had that. Deep breaths, deep cleansing breaths, calm blue ocean. I am all about this thing where they have Amu using every scrap of an advantage she can find to defeat a much, much larger, much, much stronger opponent. But I have this really strong just reaction against this, any narrative that is about dudes on a mission, dudes who are driven, dudes who have a job to do, who just lose their minds the first time a pretty girl shows up and just give up everything to get all handsy on them. Like, again, it's 2016. Can we just not anymore?
Yeah, like I don't, it's, know, insulting to both sides.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it is the most insulting, and it just paints everyone in a horrible light. Because, you know, pretty girl beats bad guy by cozying up to him and then slapping him down in the middle just says that, oh, women are all manipulative, and then, you know, toss in some sort of sex-based insult for women, because that's how that sentence tends to end. And also, men are dumb and weak and powerless and totally just slaves to their, insert slang for male genitalia here, which is, like, look, that's not insulting to anyone involved, right?
Yeah, like, God, can we just not at all,
yeah, like,
ever?
Like, yeah. Exactly, because, like, I'm thinking back to any of the Sentai I've watched, and look, I've not watched everything, but I've not seen this before, at least not this blatantly, or at least maybe not that I noticed or remembered.
I've definitely never seen it on a protagonist's side. I've never seen it coming from someone on a Sentai team. Like, that's kind of a villain lady trope.
Yeah, and even then...
to a much, much lesser extent.
Yeah, well, because, like, I mean, the thing that happens if a villainess does it, because, like, look, we can, there's a lot of ugly stuff about, like, demonizing female sexuality is inherently evil. Like, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
And it is ugly and it is really ingrained. But at least in that, like, it, you know, no matter how tempted the male hero might be, like, he doesn't just lose his sugar. It's still like, oh, wait, no, I have stuff to do that is not related to my sexual attraction to this woman. And I'm like, I prefer that, because every time it's, oh, I'm the amazing spy. Oh, but at the first chance of making out with a pretty girl, I'm just gonna throw everything away and give up all the secrets. Like, why are you a spy? How did you get this job? Because I have serious doubts about your professional acumen. Look, I'm just saying, like, oh, the first sign of a pretty girl, I just give up all the secrets. Like, you are terrible at your job. How did you get it? How did you get this far? It makes no sense.
Even then, with villain ladies, it's very... I really even can't think of a specific instance of one, like, going out of her way to try and, like, seduce one of the male heroes into...
Not on Sentai. The only one I can think of, like, in American... Well, there's been a few in American ones, but, like, the most prominent being Poison Ivy.
Mm.
But even then, it's just like, well, yes, I'm the pretty flower on the poisonous plant, and now I'm going to destroy you, and then, you
yeah,
know, of
I
course...
Mean, the closest I can think of is there's one episode of Go-Onger where the female villain disguises herself as human to try... I forget exactly what they're doing, but she ends up training in the mountains with Go-On-Red and Go-On-Green, and Go-On-Green is attracted to her, and, like, spends the whole episode, or spends, like, good half, most of the episode, kind of flirting with her, or being attracted to her, and Go-On-Red's like, pay attention to what we're doing, but the entire thing is, she is, one, unaware of him feeling this way, and two, when he tries to confess her, she's like, these compliments you are saying to me are an insult where I come from. Please go fall off the mountain.
Nice.
It is my favorite episode of Go-Onger, and I love it to death. But again, like, that's really the closest I can think of us coming of there being, like, a ranger who's distracted by the sexuality of a female villain. And even then, it was not intentional on her part.
Yeah, like, it's... Yeah, I mean, like, there's actually, like, an almost good version of this that I can think of in the Car Ranger episodes of Gokaiger.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, where sort of it's reversed, where it's just like, oh, yeah, the red Car Ranger is really cute. And then Gelusto shows up and is the villain. I love you, Gelusto.
Oh, my God, that's a good episode. Everyone go watch that episode of Gokaiger. Like, right now.
Yeah,
just,
like,
pause this and come back when you're done.
Yeah, that's one that, you know, where they play with, like, okay, people are attracted to each other, but it's in a fun and healthy way, unlike this.
Yeah,
trope,
like, this is...
just needs to go
this
to
is
hell.
Really a mess, and they should not be doing it.
Yeah, and yet at the same time, it's in the episode where I'm like, man, way to go, Super Sentai! Like, a part of me is honestly thinking, now that we're sort of spinning out about it, and given how big a statement it is, like, again, like, I'm imagining producer interference, and they're like, look, we're gonna catch a lot of crap for this, you guys. That's why we can't have the head writer doing it, especially since she's a woman, because everyone flips out if a woman says something feminist. At least if they're anything like the anti-feminist said back home.
Yeah!
Yeah, so if a dude says it, they're like, ah, he's just, and then you just insert whatever their latest stupid insult that honestly doesn't make any sense or is based on a stupid idea.
Yeah.
But, like, there is a part of me that's like, well, you know, maybe a producer just, again, given how kind of contentious this idea is, just sort of stepped in and said, okay, well, we have to play things up a whole bunch and make it really uncomfortable for people so that so that we won't be accused of being a bunch of feminists or something.
Yeah, I mean, like, we'll believe whatever we have to. But, yeah. I mean, like, even on the level of, like, Amu having, of doing these things, this one felt much more, like, comedic and not quite, like, this definitely felt like them just playing it up and not quite like the time she was like, hey, Misao, me and Sela will like you if you do this thing. Like, that felt a lot more subtle and gross, whereas this very much feels like we're playing this up, like, we're playing up the acting here.
Yeah.
I still don't like it.
But even that excuse
doesn't make it okay.
No, it does not. But we have to, look, we have another, like, 20-some episodes to go, so.
Yeah, we have to do what we can.
And again, they did. Super Sentai planted its flag firmly in, yo, you let women go and do sumo, you guys. This is stupid. What are you afraid to step in the ring with a woman? Are you a coward?
And,
what's up?
And look, for all that those, like, maybe 15 seconds were real unpleasant, this was a really good 22-minute episode that I expected to be really bad.
Yeah, and look, I don't know how much of the fact that we were expecting it to be hot, smelly garbage is affecting the the judgment we have. But fair is fair. Like, I do want to make it known, I expected this to be hot, smelly garbage.
Yeah, so did I, and I actually really enjoyed it. Speaking of things we enjoyed, let us move.
Man, that was a really good segue. Usually, I'm the one who brings in the really good segue. High five. That was nice.
Yeah. So let's get into our Tide Turners. And for me, I loved Amu, like, covering her eyes for half a second over the sumo buddies being, you know, nearly naked, but then getting distracted by how curious she was about what they were doing that she didn't really care. Like, she covers her eyes and then immediately uncovers them, like, but wait, what are they doing?
Okay, they're naked, ew, but at the same time, why are they naked?
It's like, what are they doing, though? Amu and Leo misunderstanding what cat trick meant and just being really offended by the idea of people messing around with cats was really cute. Like, they're just so proud. Like, excuse you, we are felines and we do not approve of this. Like, they just want to defend their genus. They're good cats.
Just, you know, yeah. They're proud to be cats, as they should be.
As you know, cats, all cats are.
Yeah, they are. Look, they are lords and masters, even if they don't know it. Or rather, even if we don't know it. Yeah, because they know it.
They know it. Giving Misao his little backstory with how he got embarrassed at a sumo meet, I thought was really nice. A nice way to build on his story. And kind of, they've given him this backstory of wanting to be, like, athletic so that he can make friends. And it was a nice way to build on that, and also felt like a very natural way to distract him and Yamato so that Sumotron could beat them.
And also just, like, it's just like, aw, that poor kid.
Yeah.
He can't catch a break anywhere.
He tries so hard.
He does, and, you know, and of course that's always kind of the problem, because after a certain point when you're trying so hard, that's why you can't get the thing you want, which is just the fundamental hell of having social anxiety, but
yeah.
Also wanting to socialize.
Yeah.
If I need it, I can't have it. But how do I stop needing it?
I can kind of understand Amu not wanting to put on a mawashi, as, you know, she doesn't know anything about sumo, and literally no one she has seen wearing one has had a top on.
Yeah, and they have not had the Onizumo around to show her, like, no, we all wear, like, you know, tank tops, and it's we're covered. It's
yeah,
cool.
And I mean, like, they're all covered in dirt and all of that. And I mean, even if the "it's not cute" phrasing felt a little weird, but it's like, okay, that's just Amu. She likes being cute, and I'm glad Leo didn't try to pressure her to do it with him, or he didn't insult her for kind of wanting to back off a little. He just kind of let her step back and find her own way to help, which is, you know, more than I normally expect of Leo. And then when Leo steps into the ring against Sumotron, he kind of looks back at Amu for a second and, you know, kind of sees her kind of praying that he'll beat him. And it really feels like he doesn't want to let her, and by extension the team, down. And it's this real small thing that really changes the moment so that it's not about Leo, and that Leo knows it's not about himself. And it feels weird to have a moment that really endears me to Leo. But I love the way that Shimoyama writes him.
Yeah, same. Because, you ain't kidding. That was a beautiful moment, because it's just like, oh man, Leo, I get you. I get you, dude.
You just want to do right by everyone.
Yeah, you're just also kind of dumb and filled with bad information. Okay, I get you.
Yeah, it's like, okay, let's work with this. Let's work on it. And as much as I don't like the build-up, Amu's finishing move on Sumotron was pretty sick.
Yeah, you ain't kidding.
And again, just the way that both Leo and Sumotron praise her for her victory was great. I also really like the group finisher with all the cube shots spinning around the burst and final. I thought that was a pretty neat visual.
Mm.
One thing I really loved that, again, I wasn't expecting, and it makes me want Shimoyama to just write the rest of the show, I love Azald and Naria sitting down for tea to watch the sumo match. Like, it's the first time we've seen Naria drink anything.
Mm-hmm.
We're on episode 33. They were around drinks all the time. Her job is drinks. This is the first time we've seen her get to drink something. And, like, that says so much. And I'm glad she got this little break, and it was another really nice moment of seeing Azald and Naria on a completely equal level.
Yeah,
like,
they're
sitting next to each other.
Work.
Yeah, and I really hope that when she overthrows Genus and kicks him into the void of space, like, she keeps Azald around to beat people up with, because it seems like they actually get along pretty well.
Yeah, look, like, I would not have thought, like, okay, Azald can live. I'm like, nah, that's cool, yeah.
It's like, yeah, no, he's her buddy. Like, they both just want to wreck people. They want to see some destruction.
I can respect that. Is it a thing everyone should do? Certainly not. It's a great villain motivation, though. Like, no, we're here to wreck stuff. Do you think we're just going to hang out and act all bored and stuff while we do it? No, we're here to wreck stuff. I have gunchucks. You got big blocky fists. Let's do this.
Man, we are going to sit down front row and watch this sumo dude beat up these animals. It's going to be great.
Hey man, these friggin' Sentai who have been making our lives very difficult for the last 6 months, let's watch them just get pounded into paste. It's going to be great.
I love it. My last one is just at the very end, you know, after Amu talks to Leo, and she just kind of starts, everyone's kind of messing around playing sumo, and Amu just runs in and starts just cat-tricking everyone.
Yeah.
She's like, this is my special move now.
Yeah, look, I really hope that comes back, actually, because honestly, like, I didn't get it at first, and it's like, oh, right, little burst of air right in your opponent's eyes. That's
and the sound
closely.
And just and a very and a very sudden, like, that'll mess with you for a couple seconds.
Yeah, like, if especially like if you aren't ready for it, which, you know, I imagine most of your trained sumo are, because it is well known enough that it has a name, but still
it's a legal move, and apparently they're categorized like pretty strictly.
Yeah, like, I was actually really impressed, like not just in Overtime's subtitling here, but also just that the show would go through and explain so much of the rules and how it works. I came away with what felt like a half decent foreign layman's understanding of, okay, what is this sport and how does it work, which is kind of cool. Now I have half an idea of what sumo is, besides just, you know, two big dudes just slamming into each other.
Yeah.
And how, like, Hawaii, I remember, like, I want to say in the 90s, was super excited because they had the first Hawaiian Yokozuna, which, like, look, for like, doing a national sport of a different country. I mean, I know that Hawaii and Japan have been really tight for a long time, but still.
Still.
Like, that's impressive. But, you know, sort of bringing it back to the show, because we do go on. I just still, and we've talked about it already, but I just liked that for all, again, I am not a fan of how it happened, of the way it was directed, but Amu did win, and the show is basically just, no, look, you guys, she 100% beat him, this was all inside the rules, there is no way you can say she didn't win, and yeah, good, I like that. And they did just say a girl can totally win at sumo, and that's, again, like you were saying, like, 8-year-olds are starting to get into it. That's the core demographic for Super Sentai. It's beautiful. And again, they definitely said it could be done. Like, it's not even like, oh, she's a special girl who did it. It's just like, nah, dude, she beat you. Period. Nothing she did was illegal. All those moves were down. And again, you just got suckered, bro.
The absolute lack of sore loser in it.
Yeah, like, which is still so good, because he's like, oh, well, you got me.
It's like, hey, you beat me, and you did real well. Good job.
Yeah, yeah. Like, which, again, like, just hammers home Mario's thing. Like, look, there's stuff the smaller fighter has to do, because you're against a bigger opponent. And I really like that they actually sort of go into, like, look, if you're strong, you have one strategy. But there's no shame if you're smaller and weaker than someone else. If you have to go around them and be sneaky, you friggin' do it.
Yeah.
Because, like, no one... That's not a thing you ever hear, but it's also the truest thing ever.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's really easy for, like, you know, two, like, 8-foot-tall dudes who are, like, 8 feet wide at the shoulder and just brimming with muscle to be like, yeah, someone steps to you, you punch their faces in, because that's what you do. It's like, yeah, that's easy for you, dude. What if you're tiny? What if you're, like, 3 feet tall and weigh, like... 7 pounds.
I am less than five feet tall. I am a very tiny lady. I have had to learn my tricks.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and the show just comes out and says, no, look, against someone who's stronger than you, you're allowed to be tricky. It's, in fact, it is the proper thing to do, because...
That's called survival.
They're stronger than you. And I'm like, yeah, that's not a moral you would see coming out of the States, I think, which is
one of
the things I've really come to appreciate. You know, it's a thing I always liked watching anime, and now that after I had my break with that, because early 2000s had, like, just not a lot of really great or particularly interesting stuff to me. But then I get into Tokusatsu, and it's like, oh yeah, right, this is another culture. They have, there's a lot of stuff that's similar enough that, you know, it makes sense to me still, but also enough stuff that's different that I'm like, oh, that's okay. You know, and it just, it's stupid that I get all these big revelations, but it's one of the strengths, honestly, of children's media, because children's media has to be honest, it has to be direct, and it has to be clear. And I think that's one of, anyway, I'm getting off on a whole other tangent. I'm really sorry. But,
But I mean, it's true.
Yeah, it is. And okay, getting back into the things I liked with this episode specifically, as opposed to just, like, all of a whole bunch of stuff generally. Just to follow on from another point of yours, I think Shimoyama just should always be brought in to write Leo, because in this one he comes off as an insecure guy who makes a lot of noise to cover up how he doesn't want to mess up, as opposed to just being a human fedora again. Sorry, Trilby, a human Trilby, who unironically talks about, like, yes, I'm an alpha male, just, like, all the time. So instead just with, like you said, like, that little glance back, like, oh, right, now I get him. He's just afraid of everything all the time, so he just shouts up forever because he thinks that will make him brave. And I'm like, Leo, I get you, dude, I like you.
Yeah, like, please just let Shimoyama keep writing Leo.
Yeah, like, you know, Junko, Kimura Junko can just write everyone else, maybe not Amu, maybe Keith.
Yeah, no, give Shimoyama the cats.
Yeah, I think that. But yeah, it's just really, I get them and I like them now, and that's the first time that's happened. And finally, I just really liked Azold getting involved and then seeming to kind of throw the fight. I wasn't entirely sure that he did, but it seemed like
he definitely did. Like, they called the fight over before they even stopped wrestling.
Oh, that's right, yeah. But like, there's nothing on earth that can make me care about Genis in any sustained way at this point, but at least Azold and Kubar, like, they've been bringing the thunder the past couple episodes, and I've been like, Kubar, I like you, you're trying to kill your boss, that's great. And Azold is just like, nah, dude, you're a dude who participates in plans and throws down and has a drink with your bro Naria.
Yep.
That's look, I mean, like,
that's more than we expected.
Yeah, well, because again, like, what's Genis's thing? Just like, I'm so bored, oh, but I have a vague evil plan that maybe eventually I'll bring in, and now I'm gonna have a drink. Bleh. I mean, again, he was menacing for, like, 2 episodes when we introduced Misao. He was hella menacing. But then it's just like, poof, it's gone.
Like, he immediately stops caring about anything.
Yeah, as soon as it's out of his sight, he's just like, I'm bored, I'm gonna lounge some more.
It's like, he was interesting for, like, a whole 5 minutes when Bungle first showed up.
Yeah, yeah. But then as soon as it's out of his sight, he's just like, oh, well, I guess I'm Mr. Disaffected again. It's like, well, I'm glad Bungle's here because, like, at least Bungle is eventually going to murder someone. Like, yeah. He's just going to come in. He's going to have fun with it. Like, he's going to be like, all right, so turns out I've sucked out the most precious memory you have, and now it's the monster you must kill, or else your world will die. It's like, that's cold.
Dude is intense.
Yeah, he is about messing people up, and if you stand in the way of him and getting his Moby Dick, like, he will... Wow, that sounded really terrible out of context. I'm so sorry. But if you stand in the way of him murdering that whale, he will just sadistic wreck you. Like, man, you have a completely different philosophy from me. I'm not just going to disagree with you and maybe write a paper about it. I'm going to break your heart. Dang, dude! That's some supervillain stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. Now, as we're kind of already getting into stuff we would like to see happen, what do we think... Let's get into our evolutions really quick, and what do we think this show has in store for us in coming episodes?
Bird, has to show up eventually again, right? Like, he's gotta come back sooner or later. I mean, I feel like he might show up next episode, but that's not much more than a gut feeling.
Yeah, it certainly feels like well past time. Like, is Kusaka busy doing something else now? I know his name's not Kusaka, that's the name of his I remember. Like, is he just, like, busy doing other stuff? Could Toei not get JoJo Senior from JoJo to voice Larry? What's the deal, you guys? Like, are we just gonna get a whole episode of Larry Bird just chilling and explaining the backstory? Because, look, I admit I don't know what Bird's deal is, but Larry's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, like, look, we're on 33, that gives us another 17 episodes. Yes. He's gotta show up sometime soon.
Yeah, it's, like, it's a little past time, you guys. Come on now. Now, before we, as our sort of last segment this episode, we've got a question for our quick reflexes section. So, Shimoyama, who has covered the past two episodes, and just me inserting, apropos, you know, just inside the question, and is basically my favorite on this show.
Yes.
Writes Leo very differently than head writer Kimura. In this episode specifically, Leo emphasizes fighting fairly, head-on, and with all of one's strength. This directly contradicts the core of Leo's conflict with Sella, namely that he held back and let her win in a fight out of a misguided sense of, quote, chivalry, end quote. What do we think Shimoyama is up to? And how could this affect Leo going forward?
This idea of fighting fair definitely felt real odd coming out of Leo's mouth with what we know about his relationship with Sella. But having Leo cement that idea in himself and having him specifically out loud relate it to the fighting tournaments in Zooland may be Shimoyama's push to have Leo connect the two ideas. I mentioned a lot earlier how Leo and Amu both relate to the cat trick. Leo with some disdain as he finds it tricky and underhanded and unfair, while Amu finds it to be a viable strategy, especially since it's a legitimate move, especially for smaller or, quote, weaker fighters, and isn't considered cheating. The fact that she sees Leo employ this strategy and regards it as him maturing as a fighter also kind of speaks to that idea, and not using it and his refusal to use it is another instance of Leo holding himself back in order to stand by a potentially misguided ideal, i.e. that he has to be, quote-unquote, strong in the real way, to borrow a phrase, in order to win the fight. And instead, and standing by that ideal, as misguided as it is, instead of using all of the tools at his disposal to fight at his best. And facing an opponent with everything he has, be it Sumotron or Sella, is the fairest way for him to fight, which seems to be the lesson that Leo gained out of this episode, along with the fact that the fight isn't about him. It's not just a chance for him to show off how great he is in one way or another, be it his ability to fight or his, you know, quote-unquote chivalry. Win or lose, he just has to give his all for the fight to have meaning, and hopefully this will lead us back around to that rematch with Sella that you and me specifically keep hoping for.
Man, we can only hope. Because I really hope it is a thing where we see him learn to purge the toxic parts of his masculine self-ideal in order to not be a man, but instead to be, like, a person, an individual who doesn't have to perform all the friggin' time, because he's actually got something going on inside of himself. Because, I mean, geez, like, I'm hoping against hope that after all this, We'll see him admit to Sela that the reason he won't fight her is because he's afraid of what the other lions would say if he got beat by a girl. Or maybe by a fish? Because, like, I don't know how interspecies relationships in Zooland go, but, like, a fish beating a cat just feels like a real blow to the cat. Like, again, like, we have cats.
Yeah.
Like, if their food beat them, they would be really upset.
Yeah.
I mean, admittedly, you know, it's a little different because, like, lions don't really eat sharks and both are predator species, but it's just one of those things where, like, I think you could, if they actually had the thing where he would come in and say, like, man, like, the other lions would be, just make fun of me mercilessly if I lost to a fish after fighting my hardest. Because I can say it's chivalry and I lose, and they'll be like, oh yeah, it's cool. But if I say, no, I fought my hardest and a fish beat me, like, no end of trouble. But, and that's just, that would be interesting because that would explain, like, oh yeah, he's afraid. Like, he has an emotion. or even just because he's so full of himself that he's afraid he'd do her some real damage or that she wouldn't stay down because she is a tenacious fighter. And just something like where he has to admit he's not doing these things because of, like, honor or whatever, but because he's scared. Like, this episode does feel like we get to see him have that that moment of honesty or vulnerability that the character, honestly, this whole time has been completely lacking. Like, we know everyone else's vulnerabilities. Like, we know Yamato, you know, he's got this thing with his mom. Again, that mom, that episode where he thought his mom came back from the dead, like, ah. Oh. That was heartbreaking, and it broke his heart, and he's connected to people, and when you mess with his connections, like, he dies a little. Tusk is messed up because he's not good at people. He wants to be. He's terrible at it because, you know, he's an awkward dude. Misao, same thing. Anxiety issues out the wazoo that make him, that prevent him from getting the things he wants. Amu has all this stuff with her mom and has, you know, from this...
She has this dependency
that
makes it kind of hard for her to function with knowing when she should be doing things.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and Sela is just like, no, I've got my family to get back to, and I want to know how good a fighter I am, and you're the best fighter I know, Leo. And, like, everyone's got these vulnerabilities. Everyone's got these things they're scared of. Everyone's got these things they can lose. And until now, I haven't felt like Leo did, and I didn't realize that was what was missing until, again, and I think it was exactly the moment you pointed at, that bit where he looks back over his shoulder at Amu just before he goes into the ring, because if he messes this up, like, that's it, period. Like, the world is over, he's failed his friends, Earth is dead.
Like, Earth is dead, like, there's no way home.
It's his fault, and he just, like, oh my god, dude, I can't even. And I just want to see more of this. Like, if we could get him to admit on screen, like, oh yeah, like, I'm just this loud because I'm scared. Which, like, look, if they said it exactly like that, yes, it would be clunky as hell and kind of after school special. At the same time, it would also be like, look, being this loud dude who kind of overrides and runs over everyone around him because he has to be the best and the strongest at all times, that's no way to be. Like, you know, you can be masculine, you can be proud and loud and whatever, but, you know, if you do it the way he's doing it, it's frankly toxic, it's unkind.
Like, you're hurting it's people.
Yeah, exactly, you're just hurting people all the time for no reason. I mean, you know, for a reason that is...
It's a reason you need to examine.
Yeah, exactly. Because ultimately, you know, what is the reason? He's afraid. And look, if he could just say that, I could like him.
Yeah.
I might be like, you are still a bad person, but, you know, he'd be a bad person in the way, like, your Dr. House is a bad person.
Like he'd be a bad person...
Guy, but you get him.
Yeah, he'd be a bad person with the potential to not be a bad person in the future.
Yeah, and of course that would make every time he's still a bad person slightly more frustrating, but as long as you could see him trying to work around it, you'd be like, okay, yeah, all right, you're trying to get better, you're working at it, that's all anyone can ask.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, people can ask a lot more, but...
Yeah, but, I mean, like, look, some people are bad people sometimes. Good people are bad people sometimes because the world is hard.
Yeah, the world, yeah, and sometimes you gotta be monstrous so that you can just live. Again, like, to get back to the theme of the episode, you gotta play the hand you're dealt.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, sort of explicitly putting his, I mean, as again, as you pointed out, like explicitly putting his big masculine code of honor, I have to be the biggest and the strongest, against Amu winning the tournament by being, frankly, the smartest person in the ring.
Like, and I do really wish he'd have that conversation with Cell, where he's like, look, I can't, I did that, and I'm afraid to fight you again because I'm scared of what'll happen if you beat me. I'm scared of what other people will say, and I just want Cell to be like, Leo, who cares?
Yeah.
Like, or even, people mess with you, both of us, you and me both, will go beat them up because we've just found out we're the best fighters in Zooland.
Yeah, we're numbers 1 and 2. Yeah, but if I'm number 2, everyone will make fun of me. Do you know what you do if they make fun of you? What? Just roar. I will run.
It's like,
why?
Leo,
because people who just make fun of you, they're kind of cowards.
Yeah, like, Leo, cowards. You're number 2.
Oh my goodness. He's the cowardly lion.
Oh, God.
He's a cowardly lion because, like, the thing in the books was the cowardly lion only picked on people who were no threat to him in Wizard of Oz, and that's kind of his thing here.
Oh, Leo. I'm not used to feeling sympathy for you.
Yeah, like, it's amazing what one writer change, one moment can do. Of course, it doesn't hurt that it was after the episode where you saw his hidden side come out, and you're like, well, maybe saw his hidden side come out. Maybe Shimoyama just likes to write him as a decent fella.
Yeah.
I don't know. But like, I don't, putting like, that there,
man,
it's a nice lead-in.
Like, Shimoyama really has some things to say about Leo.
Yeah, and does so in a way that is quiet and calm and completely self-assured without having to signpost it. And I'm really, like, again, in 2 episodes, I have basically turned a corner on the guy.
Yeah, I mean,
impressive.
I'm very afraid we're going to go back to Komura and, you know, it's all going to fall apart out from under us. But
I think the upside, though, is that now that we've seen this, we can't unsee it. It's part of the story. It's part of the text. Like, it's going to frame everything going forward in the light of him using the cat trick and looking back over his shoulder. Like, everything going forward has that as its basis. And I swear, if they would have done this 10 episodes ago,
it would have made a lot of Leo way easier to deal with. Because, again, even in episodes that are not about him, in episodes where he has one line, that one line often makes me want to shove him in a ditch.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
He's been so impossible to bear up to this point.
And now it's just like, all right, okay, all right, you're a big scaredy cat.
And it's like, okay, I may still not agree with what you're doing, but I can get where, I can get the place that it's coming from, and I can want more for you.
Yeah, you believe the line that dudes can't have emotions and still be dudes. And the thing where, like, you know, you have to just be loud and strutting and you know, wearing your awful fedora all the time to peacock so that girls will like you because then you play the game at them, right? And you just start negging them and all that nonsense. And instead it's like, oh, right, what is the core of that? Fear. Insecurity. Anxiety. Cool. And like, I, you know, I'm not saying that makes being a jerk or hurting people okay, but it
but
is.
But I mean, like it shows people
now,
that, like, it'll show these kids they don't have to do that.
Yeah, if you want to be cool like Leo, the cool thing to do is care about your friends, have their backs, and deal honestly with them, including to the point where, you know, when you trust someone, you can just say, you know, even if it's like the most egotistical version, it could be when he fights Cella. It could, even if it's like, Cella, I am afraid that if I really went hard at you, I would hurt you, and I couldn't live with myself if I did that. That would still be.
Yeah, that would be fine because
an
that's.
Admission. That's still, like, him being honest.
Yeah.
This isn't the,
it's like,
show.
I held back not because I don't believe in your strength, but because I'm a little afraid of my strength.
Yeah, I mean, because, and look, that is, again, speaking of things you never see coming out of Western media, like, one of the things that I've really always adored with, not always, but I've come to really appreciate with a lot of Japanese media, is that they have so many stories about people who are so overwhelmingly strong and have to master that. Like, it's, you know, it's Musashi, right? He's the best. Word one. He is a killer of men. He is the greatest swordsman, but he's not really the greatest until he can learn to draw that back, until he can learn to put the brakes on. having all this strength is not as important as knowing how to be vulnerable. Like,
yeah.
Beautiful. And I, you know, again, if we could have that moment for, yes, I want that for Leo. I want, you know, again, even if it's going to be like, yes, I am manly man, strong man, at least at that point it's, oh, but you actually care about someone else. And it's not some weird, like, you know, strutting, swaggering nonsense where you're like, I will not deign to fight a woman. It's,
yeah, because, I mean, like, even at that point, Sela could say, like, look, man, I understand that, and look, you probably can hurt me. You're strong enough that you probably could hurt me in a fight, but I can also hurt you in a fight, and I'm willing, like, look, we're willing to take that.
Good enough, you'll stop. When I go down, you'll stop, but you'll get back up, Sela, I know you. Look, you're just gonna have to trust me.
And I want this for Leo, and I want this for both of them.
Yeah, because at that point, like, it's putting such a good cap on their whole conflict from early on in the show, and it would show, like, how far has Leo come. And again, even if Sela loses, it's still like, you know, she could have that really cool moment at the end, like, when she's getting carted off to the medbay, because, look, I do not imagine either of them would stop fighting till they could not move.
Yeah.
She's a shark, he's a lion. Like, look.
Yeah, but look, she, like, they'd, like, have her on the gurney, and Leo would be like, oh man, Sela, like, this is what I was afraid of, oh my god, and she's like, nah, dude, and just fist bump, like, this is, you did,
now
you,
I know.
You get, now we know. You gave me exactly what I wanted.
Yeah, hey man, now I know for certain you are indeed the better fighter, because she's classy, and
yeah.
She could go back to Zooland and show her, you know, show dad, like, yeah, dude, Leo just mopped the floor with me. Oh, honey, are you okay? Oh, yeah, it was great. It was the first time I actually fought him. It felt good to fight a master.
Because, like, look, I don't think Sela would be ashamed of being in second place.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what this, like, what this whole episode had going for it. That, again, I liked the moral, which was, look, yeah, if someone's better than you, be tricky. And with the implication that, look, if you fight them on their terms, you could lose. And there's no shame in losing. Because if you step to someone stronger than you and you lose, that's not because you suck. That's because they're stronger than you and you knew that going in. And hey, that was actually really brave to try. Brave or stupid, you know? I mean, I'm not saying, hey everyone listening to the show, go find someone giant and fight them because that's cool. That's not cool.
No, no.
It's not very smart at all. But,
also, this is like a legitimate sporting event with rules and things.
Yeah.
Like, don't just go pick a fight on the street. That's a terrible idea.
That is, like, look, I mean, you know, yes, we've all seen Fight Club. It's actually really hard to get into fight. Yeah, it's not as, I do not imagine it as hard as that, because the whole point of that work is, men are so weak now, we need to just go fight each other. Actually, I am the conscious embodiment of toxic masculinity. I don't actually want anything. I give you nothing back. I just blow stuff up. Like, well, because, I mean, again, like, the whole thing in Fight Club, like, What does Tyler Durden actually accomplish? Nothing. He just gets a whole bunch of people to join his crazy Viking death cult, and that's it. Like, he's basically a Morton Joe. Like, that's his end goal. Like, he's a Morton Joe. Like, congratulations. Thank goodness Charlize Theron is here, so she can just, like, just murder the crap out of him. Man, have y'all seen Fury Road?
That's yeah, y'all should go see Fury Road. And by go see, I mean, like, buy, because it's on DVD now. You can't really go somewhere to see it. You should just make it come to you.
Look, if your friend has it, go to their house. Like, hey guys, can we watch Mad Max Fury Road? Because, like, that is never a bad idea. Like, now they're making a special edition based on this thing a person on the internet, I don't actually know their gender, but did where it's in black and white, and they took out all the dialogue.
Yeah.
So it's just this stark black and white, friggin' amazing visual experience, because you're just watching, it's still got all the roars and the sound effects, but, like, there's no people, and it's just, it is still such a ride. It used to be around on the internet, it was just called Mad Max, I think Blood and Chrome or something like that, but it got taken down with the quickness, as you might imagine. Yeah, I saw that stuff in theater. That was really good. But anyway, toxic masculinity leads to a Morton Joe, and you know, that's nothing anyone needs.
Yeah, you know, long story short there, but,
Yeah, long story short, hell with toxic masculinity, which, again, like, just because I've been throwing the phrase around, and sometimes there are misunderstandings. This is not like masculinity is inherently evil. This is just like there are ways people do it that are unhealthy for everyone involved. Hence the adjective and modifier toxic at the start. Like it is a separate thing from masculinity generally, just to be clear, because there are a lot of people who do not bother making those distinctions, and
there are a lot of people who don't
see I can't be arsed.
Those people don't want to make the distinction.
Yeah, well, because it's much easier to say they hate all men and manliness than they hate the part of manliness that makes me kind of a terrible person, and if I reckon with the fact that I'm a terrible person, I would actually change, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah, but I mean, other than that, that's pretty much, I think, everything we've got for 33.
Yeah, this is a good episode. Like, I'm sorry that I sort of, like, took up the back end with a lot of like, Leo as potential vector for deconstructing toxic masculinity when, like, look, one of the big things was Super Sentai planting their flag, like, yo, let girls sumo.
Yeah.
Do it.
And again, I definitely want to look more into this. If anyone finds any other good articles or pages on this, please send them my way. Again, I'm Mama Fries Meal on Twitter. I would love to read more about this.
Yeah, because it's... And send it to me as well, at NeedsMoreAleph, because, like, look, it's a fascinating subject, and it's a thing I had not realized, and it's a I am fascinated by the controversies that happen around gender in basically everywhere, because the whole, like, gender divide fight thing is bizarrely fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Like, of course, I'm a dude, I get to be just fascinated by it, because no one's stopping me from things.
I mean, I know over on Toku Ladies, they're going to also be covering this now. I sent them the same sources that I looked into. Hopefully they'll find some other things and send them back my way. I would love to read more about this. I want this spread among, you know, Toku fans who are watching Zoojer, because I want everyone to realize just this episode was so important on that level. Because again, 8-year-old girls joining their elementary school sumo clubs, who are the exact people this show is meant for.
Yeah, yeah, that is just beautiful. And I really just, you know, this is some, like, Kamen Rider 4 is a chest thump congratulation point, you know? That just...
Yeah, because just nothing in this episode argued even slightly that girls should not be doing sumo.
Yeah, I mean, again, not a fan of the way they played Amu's excellent tactics, but that was the only problem, because everything else was like, look, yeah, if you're smaller, you gotta be smart.
And even then, like, my problems with her doing that aside, even that is not, you shouldn't be doing sumo.
No, exactly. It's just, that's just, like, my personal, like, ugh. But yeah, it's
yeah,
not.
Yeah, again, it's mine, too.
You shouldn't be doing sumo. It's just, yeah, the show is completely 100% in the tank for, yo, why not? And I
let
I'm just
the girls,
like,
do,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, why not? Like, so, I'm if it was...
So proud.
Like, just the whole thing where it's, like, I was so surprised to find, like, there's no professional league? Holy crap!
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it's that thing where tradition, just as in every country, because I do not want people to think I am just some foreigner going and pointing at someone else's country
Lord,
you suck, my country's great.
All of the things in America with women, like, look, there's things that can't be defended everywhere, but,
yeah,
like, this, and just thinking, like, it was only 143 years ago that women weren't even allowed to watch.
Yeah.
Like, they,
yeah,
were not even allowed to be in attendance for a sumo match. That's,
yeah,
like, 1.5 lifetimes of a human,
yeah,
being.
Yeah, and I just, yeah, it's
that's
it's really
not
intense.
That long ago.
It is not. And again, just because I always worry, just, like, this is not some, like, you know, speck of sawdust in my brother's eye while I pay no, you know, while I ignore the plank in mine, right?
Oh yeah. Like, oh Lord, no. But yeah, I mean, this is sumo is the theme of this episode. It's,
yeah, and
it's the thing relevant to what we're discussing.
Yeah, and like, because, like, this is not me, like, trying to shut you down. So no, I'm just
trying to make sure
that we are framing our that we have our framework and all the caveats that are necessary and attendant in place, because I I worry about these things.
Yeah, no.
And I don't want to hear people being like, why are you saying this? Do you think XYZ? Like, no, I explicitly said we don't.
Like, no, it's just all of those things are not relevant to the subject at hand.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just...
But,
Man, this was a...
I mean, all that aside, this is... pretty much everything we've got for Zoologers 33. So we'll be next week's. Seems like Bungle's coming back. Something's gonna happen with Yamato. Gut feeling says maybe Bird will show up.
I hope so, because like again, it's like maximum 17 episodes. Come on, dude.
Yeah, it's come on, chop chop.
But pick it up. Come on, chop chop. So for Laser Knees and the Toll Network, I'm Aleph.
And I'm Sono.
And we'll catch you next time because we are out.